I'd like to welcome you all here. This is the D9 session about worship leaders and worship technicians, so I hope that that's what you're expecting here. My name is Cindy DeYoung. I work here at Calvin College, mostly with the Daily Chapel program. I work with the worship apprentices. I also am married to somebody who is both a drummer and a sound technician at our church, and so I try to be thinking about both sides of the equation here. And we invite you into this conversation with me and Carl.
I'm Carl Hordijk. I'm the manager of technical services here at Calvin. I work for the conferences and campus events office. So the sound systems that you've listened to today in anything but a classroom are under my responsibility. Three of my crew decided to come and make sure that I told the truth. So, and I'm sure they'll gleefully remind me when I don't.
And we really would like to have a fairly open conversation here today. So as we begin, let's first go to God in prayer. Oh Lord our God, we praise your holy name. We thank you for the gift that we have of coming together for worship and fellowship and learning. And we ask that you will bless our conversation here together now. Help us to learn well from each other, to listen well to each other, to come with good questions and good suggestions as we prepare ourselves to be at work in your kingdom and in your churches. We pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. We thought it would be helpful to find out who's here as we get started. So I'm curious, how many of you are pastors? Okay. Pete, you're by yourself here. how many of you are worship leaders as far as doing mostly liturgy or reading or drama, speaking kinds of worship leaders? Okay. How many of you are musicians? Quite a few. Okay. And how many of you are sound technicians? A number of you. Some of you play more than one role. That's helpful to know. And are any of you here mostly for visual things, projection and that sort of thing? Okay, so we'll try to address a little bit of everything, I guess.
Cool.
One more question. How many from churches? Any from colleges or high schools? Okay, a couple people. Well, we'll try to speak then from both of our experiences in our churches and here at Calvin.
Fantastic. We'd really like to share some of the things that we've learned throughout our working here at the college, and Cindy and my relationship dating back to all the... We have a daily chapel service and then a weekly loft service that happens in our facility. And so there's a lot of interaction between my crew and her crew and she and I. So hopefully we can share some of the stuff that works, some that doesn't. Some of the pitfalls that we've had. We'll get a chance to talk about some technical complexities and hopefully some hints that can help people out when they go back and are working with their own systems. If you're very familiar with the terms bandwidth, Q, high-pass filters, low-pass filters, some of the technical stuff that we'll talk about today will be beneath you. I must admit that. And so if this was a close second for something else that you wanted and you were really hoping to get into the nitty-gritty of sound, this might not be everything you're hoping for. But what we're really hoping to talk about is the interaction between worship planning and worship technicians.
And we have a handout that we'll give you a little bit later, but you should know that our subtitle is, well, I should let you say it. Because it comes from your perspective.
It was conversations between worship leaders and worship technicians, or... I won't strangle you with a mic cord if you don't throw a hymnal at me.
So, that indicates a little bit of some of the joy and maybe one of the frustration of working together. But yeah, we've learned to work together over the years, and I've actually worked even more with students like the guys who are here than with Carl, although it's always Carl that I go to ask questions about either his crew or some of the technical issues because he's the boss. So we'd like to share some of the things that we've learned along the way, and I thought it would be helpful for you to hear a little bit from the perspective of a worship planner, and then a little bit from the perspective of the technician, And then we'll open up the conversation. We'll give you some illustrations along the way. So from my perspective, as a worship planner and worship leader, I would say that much of my act of worship happens in the planning as much or even more than during the worship service. Now, maybe some of you have the same experience. Maybe some of you are able to really let go of thinking about the details during worship and can really enter into the worship. But I find that when I'm leading worship, I am very aware of the mechanics, the order of things, what needs to happen next, who else is involved, what's happening with the sound, and the engagement that's happening with the rest of the congregation, with the people who are worshiping with me. And so I'm trying to pay attention to some of those things, and I have to sort of set my own ability to fully participate in worship aside a little bit to enable everybody else to worship well. So my best worship often happens when I'm doing the planning. That's when I'm really into the Word, into the music, into the conversation with God, trusting the Holy Spirit to guide my planning, and so forth. And then as I work with other people in the planning process and encouraging them to lead, because a lot of the work I do is with worship apprentices, and if some of you are pastors or worship coordinators, you're giving away a lot of that to people too. And so you're paying attention to that. While I am, and that's the joy of it for me, is to do the planning and the leading of worship. I'm usually pretty comfortable in front of people, especially when things are all kind of going well. I get a little bit more nervous when I have to be at the board and help run the projection, or I can do the lights pretty easily. That's no problem. I used to help with my husband's band running the soundboard, so I know just a little bit, but that was years ago, and so I don't touch that anymore. That would make me really nervous. So that's kind of the role that I have as a worship planner, worship leader, kind of comfortable in front of people. I worship most in my relationship with God, in the planning, than in the leading. Those are the joys of being a worship leader. The challenges sometimes come when things aren't quite going right, and I realize that, the mic, I can tell they're not hearing me. So do I need to talk louder? Do I need to move away from the mic or move closer to the mic or check my battery or what am I supposed to do as a worship leader when I can tell that something's not quite right? And that's one of the questions that Carl is going to help us answer.
And as soon as I'm finished, I'd really like to toss it back to you and ask some of the joys and frustrations that you have in your particular roles. But I really want to resonate with one of the points Cindy made, and that each of us worships, when we have roles to play like this in service, we're worshiping in a way that is completely different from the rest of the congregation to some extent. That was contradictory. I heard once an illustration, someone was talking about their favorite church sound guy, and they looked back one day and he was fully involved in the service. He had his hands outstretched and his face was turned up towards heaven, and they thought at that point, now he really gets it. I disagree. When I'm operating sound, when I'm doing my part in the service, if I'm tweaking that last microphone so that the vocalist can be heard, so that the guitar lick that's going to take us from one tune to the next brings out all the good in guitar players from Jimi Hendrix to Phil Kagi, and that transition happens seamlessly, and that guitar solo is brought out at just the right moment, and it's brought back into the mix exactly at the right time, so that the lead singer can come in. Boy, that for me, that is my work. That's my job, but that's also my worship at that moment. And I think the worship for a sound technician has to be in the pew from time to time. But it also can be behind the board, and it can be doing your job to the best of your ability to the praise of the Lord. So I guess when I'm operating sound, when I'm doing the very best that I can, I have a certain amount of joy and glee that I can just walk away from that service knowing that we were able to bring the best that God has to offer to the congregation. So when things don't go right, when we encounter equipment failures, when we encounter technique failure, those are the rough times for me. Should I walk up to the platform, interrupting the sermon, and say, "No, really, you forgot to turn on the transmitter. Here, let me turn it on for you." Or you know what, that rechargeable battery just completely died. Let's change it out right now. So those are the really tough times for me when I realize that I'm getting in the way, or that the sound, or that equipment, or what we're doing is getting in the way. That's the time when I'm having the most difficulty.
We might want to talk a little bit about some projection things, too. And when Carl and I first started talking about this, we recognized how important it is for the worship leader to know the person who's at the board, and both the person who's running projection and the person who's running sound. So like a workshop that I did yesterday, one of the students that I know, Brian, was working at the projection while I was talking. And it was sort of one of these free-flowing kind of conversations, and so he couldn't necessarily go straight through the PowerPoint that I had prepared. So at some point I said, "Brian, can you skip ahead to the one that's got Peter on it?" And we knew each other well enough that I could do that instead of just kind of looking at him like, you know, trying to make some kind of sign language to communicate to him, which he was not going to understand anyway. So to know each other well enough to have a relationship that you might have to interrupt the flow of things once in a while to say, "Can you help me with this or that?" Or you might have to, as a technician, interrupt to say, "We need to fix this." And usually the purpose for that is to make everything better in the end, because usually when the sound is not working well or the projection is not working well, everybody knows it, and everybody's hearing something or seeing something that they're all wishing somebody would fix. And so sometimes it's up to us to just take that little moment to make the fix.
If I was on the speaking podium or platform and I heard something wrong, I think the worst thing I could do is just to ignore it and just keep going. I think the best thing I could do would be to address the sound person that I knew really well by his name and say, "Is there anything you need me to do to fix this? Do I need to stop for a moment?" It sure is a lot better when we can get back in track and keep going with the service and end up at the final destination rather than suffer with something through the whole thing. So that's definitely a hard thing to do, an easy thing to say. Now, if it's all right with you, Cindy, can I toss it back to you? What are some of the most difficult things that you encounter on either side, is either in worship planners dealing with technology or technology dealing with order of worship in the mechanics?
And I might just type some of these questions up and we'll throw them up on the screen and we'll see how many of them we can get to in the next 45 minutes.
Anyone? Yes, go ahead.
My biggest problem is either feedback or spurious sound.
Yeah.
Comes through the system.
When you're using a wireless microphone or wired?
Yes. A few weeks ago, we had a problem. I have a portable radio at home that plays wonderfully, and all of a sudden, it starts squeaking and squawking. And it'll do this for seconds, stop. It may do it again in 10 seconds. It may do it again tomorrow afternoon. 2 or 3 weeks ago, in church, during the service, that same exact sound came through the sound system. The board op started killing mics.
Mm-hmm. So I would suspect that he would. Yep.
The sound went away. Mm-hmm. He turned mics back on. The sound isn't there. 10 minutes later, it's back.
Yep.
And it was suggested to us that it was a cell phone on vibrate.
Did it sound like, and pardon me, I'm going to, one of my favorite shows on public radio is Car Talk. And the thing that I get the biggest kick out of is when people try to mimic the noises that they're saying. I'm going to do that now. Did it sound like this?
kind of.
Nextel. Nextel. Yep. Someone with a Nextel phone was probably too close. Do you carry a Nextel phone?
No.
I can't explain your... Are you in an apartment complex or anything where you're near other people?
No, but I'm sure there's some people in the congregation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to correlate that between your home radio and the church. But Nextel is a huge problem, especially with wireless microphones. But it happens, Nextel phones tend to interfere dramatically with sound systems. You can be sitting at your computer, and if you've got a pair of loudspeakers on your desk, and if you're carrying a Nextel phone, if it rings, you'll hear that noise. And it's very distinctive, and once you've heard it a few times, you could pick it out of a fog. Nextel is problematic.
I have one other problem that reoccurs.
Yes?
We know what it is, we just don't know how to stop it. We use a pickup to transmit to earphones for people hard of hearing.
Okay.
Okay? When somebody in the congregation has a hearing aid that squeals, it goes through that system.
Wow.
Now, how can this thing I'm wearing in my ear pick up the hearing aid in the other ear and transmit it across the sound system? Feedback. I mean, that
sure. Is it coming through? Is it coming through the sound? Coming through the loudspeakers in the church, or only through the
yes,
rest of it?
Through the loudspeakers. It's getting into the main mix.
I was doing a recording once of Kelvin's Oratorio Society, and suddenly we started having feedback in the middle of the... And if you know the Oratorio Society, they're completely acoustic. There's no microphones on the stage at all other than for recording. And we were getting feedback, and I could not for the life of me figure it out. And it kept coming back, and it was that same high-pitched squeal that you're talking about. And suddenly, after about 5 minutes, it dawned on us, it's not us at all, it's somebody's earpiece that's feeding back with itself.
And they're too deaf to hear it.
Yeah. Well, and that frequency range is something that they can't hear anymore.
They can't hear it.
So the best thing in a situation like that is for somebody nearby to tap them on the shoulder and say, and they'll know exactly what you're talking about because it bugs their wives and husbands and all of that, and they're constantly getting beat up for it, but for some reason...
We have learned to pick those people out and watch them.
Just tap them on the ear. You might also subtly suggest that they visit their audiologist for a tune-up on their earpiece. they can help a lot.
Well, we went back to the sound guy that sold us the equipment, and he said, I'm sorry. It's not my problem.
Technically impossible for that to happen.
Yes.
Well, I can't think of a way that's technically possible for that to happen. The only thing that I might say is that in that particular situation, if you have a house mic, as we would call it, a microphone that's just out in the sanctuary to pick up ambient noise to get into your recording, perhaps, or into the feed for the hard of hearing, that may be picking it up, and it could be retransmitting it through that system that way. But that feed generally has nothing to do with the feed that goes to the house loudspeakers. So how it's coming out the loudspeakers, I'm not sure. But I could have sworn when I was listening to that record, when I was making the recording, I could have sworn that it was coming out my loudspeakers, except I knew my amplifiers were off. So it might be your perception that it's coming through the loud system, but it's a very high frequency, and those high frequencies travel and bounce off everything. So I bet it's not. I bet it's not coming through the loudspeakers. It's just coming through the ear. It's through the air, and it's such a high frequency, and chances are you don't have any other high frequencies at that spectrum that are happening,
right.
And it just seems like it's coming through the loudspeaker. They can get loud, though, can't they?
We have identified those people wearing hearing aids that are a problem. We have a lot of people in the congregation wear hearing aids that are not a problem,
yeah.
Or at least not yet.
Are you using, how many, just as a curious statement, how many of you are using inductive loops to aid in hard of hearing systems? Excellent. Well, I kind of have a love-hate relationship with inductive loops. The fellow who here in West Michigan began pushing these things really hard is from Hope College. So, what can I say about that? But there is a there. He definitely has a point. Inductive loop hearing systems coupled directly with the earpiece, and there's no. It takes one acoustic mode completely out of the transmission path. And for the people who have used them, I hear that they are fantastic and they're very beneficial. There are other problems with inductive loops. They're not technically perfect in that they can interfere sometimes with some of the sound systems. If you have anyone who has an electric guitar and stands over or within the inductive loop area, they'll suddenly realize that they'll feed back. We had a guitar feed back, but it's coming through the induction of the wire into the guitar pickup and then back around. So just be a little sensitive to where that loop... If you do have an inductive loop area, know where the wire is run. Know where the perimeter of where that wire is. And if you're having technical issues within that perimeter, this might be one of the things that you'd suspect. The other thing, earlier you talked about noise problems, both in wired and in wireless. Beyond the Nextel interference, which is induced through the airwaves, two other things you might consider. With the wireless situation, I don't know how many of you are aware of this, but the white spaces, it's a frequency range between, and I'm going to get this as close to correct, between 680 megahertz up to about almost 798 megahertz. I think I got that range fairly close. If your wireless mic systems are in that frequency range, and if you don't know, go back and look at the back plate or look in your manual or something. Find out if they're within that range. You may need to pay very careful attention in the next year to what happens with digital broadcasting and with companies that have bought the access to that spectrum and will begin transmitting in that spectrum, sometimes with complete disregard to us squatters who have been using that frequency for a long time. We don't have, unfortunately, as churches and colleges and institutions, we have no right at all to be using that frequency. If you read the law very carefully, it's reserved for film production and television production. But manufacturers have been using that frequency for a long time, and we've all bought them. There's a huge, huge base of users who are using wireless microphones, some in that frequency range. That frequency spectrum has been sold. Either it has or will be soon sold to the highest bidder, which won't be us. So if you are within that range, it would be a really good idea to visit the website of the manufacturer of that wireless equipment. Find out. I promise that in bold letters on the home site of their page, they'll have something that talks about white spaces. Look into that. Check to find out whether or not you can return that equipment to your manufacturer and have them retune those to be out of the area that may or may not be a problem for you, depending on the technology as it's changing. Just one thing to keep in mind as we go forward for the next year.
Could you repeat the numbers?
Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. I believe it's about 680 through 790 megahertz.
I wonder if we can now just throw a bunch of questions out so that we make sure that we address a variety of kinds of questions that you have. I know that Carl also would like to teach a few things about mic technique, which maybe more of you will be interested in. So if we can just throw some questions out, I'll write them down.
Good idea.
And then we'll get them up on the board and take them as we can.
Peter?
The phenomenon of dead space using a wireless mic.
Okay.
Technician rehearsal.
Technician
training.
Good.
What do you do with a volunteer who is a technician that doesn't listen to instructions?
What do I do with you guys?
Spontaneity of slides.
Spontaneity of slides. Good one.
I'm paid staff as worship coordinator, but our sound technicians are volunteer. I can get there earlier and set the stuff up. It's not that big of a deal to me. Does it help the sound guys if I'm there earlier to set the stuff up?
Good question.
Know, unless we have a whole bunch of people, then, But, I mean, if it's just somebody coming for a rehearsal, a couple vocalists, I can do that.
Yeah,
they can come for a sound check later. But is that what typically is done? Because we have a lot of young guys with little children.
A lot of time.
So it's a big deal for me to do it.
Any other questions? Go ahead.
It's just some basic guidelines as to what kind of mixes support congregational singing the best.
Good one. How much time you got? In the corner?
Yeah, I just wanted an extension on this lady that was just talking. Just, you know, in a nutshell, what would be the considerations that as a worship leader and as a technician, how can you love each other?
Sometimes we don't.
I know you can go on, but even just, you know, beginnings, how to
sure.
just keep that bridge.
Sure. It's a relationship that is rife with turf war and with unnecessary strife. Put it that way. And maybe necessary strife. Maybe we just got to work through it.
Almost like how much should worship leaders know? Is it helpful for us to know a basic thing?
No, good question.
Yeah.
If maybe you'll address this, but the kinds of microphones that are best for different kinds of voices.
Good question.
Some people modulate more than you would like, and you have trouble. Mm-hmm.
That's a very good question.
How much music knowledge should a sound technician know?
Wow.
For setting that flag.
You have to trust that technician a lot, don't you? Yeah.
More is better.
more never hurts. Never hurts. Boy, unless there's anything else somebody has, we better stop.
Let's throw them up here now. There we go. Where should we start?
This phenomenon of dead spaces with wireless. But that's a pretty technical one. Let me...
Technician training and technician rehearsal and...
Let me talk about dead spaces with wireless. I'm trying to come up with some sort of metaphor. Let's say you're in a boat in a bayou somewhere, and someone throws a rock in the bayou on the other side. You can't tell me, and I can't tell you how much of those waves will come to you and impact the boat that you're sitting in. And it's going to be different whether you're behind the reeds over here or out in the middle of the lake or at the other end. It's the same thing we're talking about with wireless. There's a transmitter. A wireless is nothing more than a transmitter, a radio transmitter, and a radio receiver. Some of the really esoteric systems get into digital modulation, and they have their own set of problems. But at the basic, at their lowest level, there's a transmitter and a receiver. And the transmitter is the rock that's thrown in the bayou, and the receiver is you in the boat at the other end. The receiver needs to see those waves. Occasionally, there will be other interactions. Somebody else throws a bigger rock on the other side, and those waves interfere with your transmitter. So if your frequency is too close to another transmitting station, if you're physically close to another radio station, if there's... someone drives down the street with a high-powered transmitter in their car, CB, ham radio, whatever, some of that may be giving you interference. Nextel might be giving you some interference and some dead, that wouldn't be dead spaces, but some interference with wireless. The best thing I can tell you now, if you're having wireless issues, and if you're not capable of taking that to the next step yourself, look around your audience, find out if you can find anyone with a ham radio background. And if you can find somebody with a ham radio background, tell them the problems you're having with the wireless microphones. They may be able to help you out with antenna choice, antenna location. Maybe you need to physically move the receiver itself to another part of your sanctuary. Your sound guys won't like that much because then they don't get to see the blinky lights. And blinky lights are important for a very good reason. But there are, you've reached a level of expertise that if you're not comfortable taking it to that next step, and if you don't have anyone in your congregation that can help, you need to see a professional. And one of the last things on my handout, the one that Cindy and I prepared together, is consult a professional from time to time. Be willing to spend a little bit of cash and have a consultant or a professional come in and give your system a once-over. Yeah, you know, these not you. Everything looks to be in order. All the connections are made properly. You don't have, and at that point, they'd be happy to listen to some of the specific problems you're having and see if there are easy fixes to them. If they're not easy fixes, suggest to you money, usually, unfortunately, more gear, different installation. But this is physics. This isn't a black science. Don't let anyone tell you that there is anything mythical or mystical about sound. It's physics, and it can be understood. The answers might be difficult to come to, but it's possible to understand what these problems are, and that's what consultants and professionals get paid to do. Well, that was a lot of talk with wireless.
Let me say a little something about volunteers. As I was walking over here, I was walking with somebody who asked what I was doing, and I told him, and he said, yeah, we have this volunteer at our church who's got some of these learning disabilities, but he's our technician, and how do I handle that? I think that's a big issue in a lot of churches, because most of the time your projectionists and your sound people are probably volunteers, and maybe it's the only person you've got. It becomes a ministry issue, because you have to decide, is it more important for this person who may not have that much to offer, but here he is making a contribution to the life of the congregation, or is it more important that everybody is able to worship well without the distraction of the slides changing too late or the feedback happening and he didn't even hear it? That's an issue that I think you have to decide in each individual congregation. Now, sometimes you can bring in some of your young people. I think you guys probably all started working in high school or even younger at your churches. Bring in your young people alongside. Maybe encourage this person to see himself as a mentor to the young people, but they'll probably learn fast enough that they'll be able to help fix things. That's one possible way to handle that kind of what I do with a volunteer who's not really capable issue. Another thing to do is to try to find a way to give them more training.
Contact your equipment vendors. Contact your sound system consultants and vendors in the area. Ask them specifically pointed questions about, do they offer training? Even if it's paid, you have to pay to send somebody to go get some training. Quite often, we just had it here in West Michigan. There was a conference out at Maranatha earlier this fall, I think, and it was sound system operation and mixing, the art of mixing. Boy, get some of the people that have potential in your congregations to go to training. Pay for them to go to training and offer to bring their spouses meals while they're gone and take care of their small children. Boy, get them involved and take all the other stuff off their plate for a minute so that they can concentrate on being better at their craft. Then have them come back and ring them out for all they're worth. You have them teach everybody what they've learned at that conference and spread that around. You really need to have one person in your church that you trust to pass this on. And it's a living legacy. It's just handed down from one person to the next. You can't read enough books to be able to make this work without having someone show you tricks and the rules of the road. You just can't be that effective.
The guy that sold us our equipment, I paid him 3 hours to teach us how to operate it. And he was a former sound roadie.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember what he charged, but it was money well spent.
Good.
Because he showed us what to do and how to do it, and we established a relationship that when we have a problem, we can call him, and he'll fix it on the phone, or let me stop by after work one evening and take a look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's beyond. We had an amplifier go down.
Yep.
I'm sorry, it's broke. Take it out and send it away and have it fixed.
Have it fixed, yep.
Okay. But he didn't cost us anymore. But I did. I paid him 3 hours. One Saturday afternoon. And
when you started that conversation, I could have seen that going both ways. we paid this guy to come help us, and either it was the best money you ever spent, or this fellow talked so far over your head that you understood nothing at all. Well, we've got to get that baseline up a little bit. We've got to get some experience in there so that, well, vendors aren't talking over our heads.
We were very fortunate. He used to operate this equipment for a living.
Good.
Now he's selling the equipment.
Yep.
And he is able to talk to us that don't know what he's talking about. And that was money well spent. Money well spent.
I know what you're talking about. Technician training and tech rehearsal. So we've talked a little bit about technician training, getting one generation of technician to mentor to the next, even if it's you're mentoring up. You never learn something until you have to teach it, right? So try to make the young guys teach the older guys something new. And that's kind of an interesting. Anyway, I had an interesting experience with that, and it turned out fantastic. Is that enough about tech training? I don't know. That's sort of a Pandora's box. I could get into that really deep.
How valuable is it to have your technicians, all of them, be there for rehearsal and on Sunday?
How many of you get both of those rehearsals?
Exactly. If you're having a rehearsal for the service and then a service on Sunday, you've opened a bit of that Pandora's box that we'll probably hit next. I think, personally, the technician that's going to be there on Sunday should be the technician at the rehearsal. Because something's going to happen during that service that didn't happen at the rehearsal, but without the background of what happened at the rehearsal, you're going to miss the cue. One of the other points on this handout.
Let's do the handout now.
I'll try to address it. One of the points on the handout is pay attention. Heads up, cans off. And by cans, I mean headphones. Heads up, headphones off. Watch what's happening on stage. If you've been through a rehearsal, you're more comfortable doing that. If you haven't been through a rehearsal, you're trying to figure out why you're not getting any guitar sound coming into the board. And you've got your headphones on and you're fussing with that. At least through the rehearsal, hopefully you've made those necessary connections and you know what's going to happen. Hopefully there wasn't three weddings and a funeral in the space between the rehearsal and the service and everything got wiped out and you had to start over from scratch on Sunday morning. That's tough too. I don't have an answer for that one other than maybe your rehearsals can be closer to the service. Cindy can hopefully speak to this too, but from a technician standpoint, one of the biggest problems is when a rehearsal turns into practice. And the songs maybe are introduced for the first time at the final tech rehearsal. And they're working through how to get from this song to the next song and how the chord progression will be in this tune, instead of letting the technician do his best to, let's make sure we have a good mix coming out of this group. It's tough, I know. I've told you the horror story from the tech side. Cindy can tell you what it's like to try to get that extra rehearsal in place.
Especially working with college students, we're working with schedules that don't match up all the time. And so if we get two rehearsals, we're doing really well. And so probably our only rehearsal is our sound rehearsal. And so they are working out some of those transitions. But we encourage our worship leaders to have practiced ahead of time, the instrumentalists, the speakers, and so forth, and the lead worshiper to have worked out all those transitions so that he can at least, or she, explain it to the team efficiently enough that they can run through it without spending a lot of time on it. But I know that both for Sunday Night Loft services at that first Wednesday night rehearsal and for chapel services, they're working out a lot of those details and making the sound people just kind of wait for them to get that worked out. And that's where we kind of have to extend a little grace to each other. And I think that's where the relationship helps, too. When our students, student technicians and student worship leaders know each other, then they are more likely to say, hey, I'm really sorry for making you kind of wait while we're figuring this out. Or, hey, can you please run that again because you didn't give me enough time to get a good mix. That two measures was not enough time for me to figure out how all the instruments should go. So if you know each other, you can say, hey, Brent, can you do this for me? Or, hey, Ben, let's just say, Ben, you need to give me a few more measures here.
One of the next things that we saw, I hope we're not going to gloss over this too much, but one of the next things that, Kim, you brought up was, what can I do without having to bring the technician? And what I heard in that is, it's hard to bring the technician in every time you need him.
Yeah. So, and they're really, if I can do it, why not?
And if you can do it, why not?
Is that partly because you're paid staff and you're thinking it's this volunteer and it's kind of my job?
I know it's really not my job.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But there again, you know, it makes, it's just why, if I can turn up a mic for a soloist when I'm rehearsing with her,
I alluded to this a little bit earlier when I said hopefully there wasn't a lot of stuff that happened in the sanctuary between the rehearsal and the service. When the technician walks away from the board thinking the next time he's going to see it, he's going to do the service and everything will be just as he left it, and something has changed, their mental snapshot of how they left it isn't correct. That could potentially impact them. I'm just speaking from a technician.
Right.
This is why I wouldn't want
anyone. The way
anyone
it works at our church.
It's different. There
well,
is. No,
I will meet with whoever during the week. We go over it, and then.
Good.
And we have enough volunteers that it's like nobody's bored, so to speak. I mean, and so no one has touched it.
Right.
To do what you want to do, try to be your technician's best ally and have him show you or her, I'm sorry, have him or her show you where does he put this microphone when he's done with it so that when he needs it, he can grab it. And how does he coil cables?
If you don't know how to coil cables their way, don't try.
Well, no. It's when you're not coiled. And then I'm dealing with spaghetti.
Oh.
Yeah, and that's why we hate it too. And it's that maybe that is a black card. No.
Have
your technician show you how to coil cables, and say to them sometime, I want you to teach me how to coil a cable the way you do.
But they don't all do it the same, and some of them do it.
Maybe you need to have a coil training session.
You've got to have a coil. Is that not the first thing you got? Yeah. Okay. And if you don't know what we're talking about, a properly coiled cable will allow you to take one end and throw it, and it'll completely unwind and it'll lay flat, and there won't be any knots in it.
They know how to do that really well.
An improperly coiled cable is when somebody grasps the connector in their hand and wraps it around their elbow like this. And then they go to stretch it out, and it's the cable itself. If you imagine it stretched out, has been torsioned. It's been wrapped so much that if you get the two too close to each other, they turn into this giant mess and knot. And then once you deal with 24 of these on the floor, then you got nothing to work
so
with.
So you Google how.
Sure, and go on YouTube. There's some great videos on YouTube on how to coil my cable.
The best resource for worship planners is YouTube.
Yeah. It is to help a soloist learn a song, too.
Yeah.
So in a nutshell, get to know your technician and get to know the way they want to work, and if they're having some of these problems, steer them in the right direction. Maybe a little bit of training from a conference, kind of raise their level of professionalism just a little bit.
But it doesn't hurt if I turn up a mic and then they come in for a balance check 45 minutes before the service.
I'd like them to be at the rehearsal.
But we rehearse together, and then they are part of the end of the rehearsal.
That works. So then you're honoring his request not to waste all my time working out all those
transitions. That's how I feel.
Yep.
Why
still give enough time
they
for
take
the
sound
check? I know Carl has some really good tips for how to use microphones and how to do some mixes and so forth, and so I want to give some time for that, and then if we have time to come back to some of these other questions. I'm just curious, how many of you were at the worship service at the FAC last night? Dr. D, that woman who sang that beautiful moving solo, did you watch how she used her microphone? She was amazing. Her voice was just at the right level the whole time, and here she is. She's... In some ways, it was like contradicting what you and I have talked about, where you say, just let me worry about it. You just talk or sing or whatever you're going to do, and I'll take care of the balance. But there was somebody who was well-trained enough in her own skill, which was using her voice, and the technical aspect of it that she knew how to just make that thing. It was amazing. Was one of you writing it?
I was working then, and that makes my job a whole lot easier. Where I don't have to babysit her fader and keep track of it. And
it was.
She's such a skilled singer where she can do that.
Yeah. So if you are going to the FAC worship service tonight,
Let me explain to you why that works. And before your eyes glaze over, we're going to talk about physics. Sound doubles in intensity. There's a 6 decibel difference every time you double the distance. If I'm speaking at a certain level this far away from the microphone, and I double that distance to that far away, the microphone will be picking up 6 decibels less of my voice than it was when it was here. And it works all the way up to your teeth. So if I half this distance to here, now there's 6 decibels more. And half it again, 6 decibels more. Half it again, 6 decibels more of my voice that's impacting the microphone itself. The worst thing in the world is when someone comes up to make an announcement. Let's call Harold out of the audience, and he's going to tell us all about this new building project that we have. He takes the microphone, and he wants to talk to everybody like this. There's not much sound that comes out of his belly button.
At least we hope not.
We hope. And it's out here. The microphone has to be close to this in order to make it work. Somebody mentioned feedback problems. Feedback is the result of open microphones, the number of open microphones you have on, I'm going to call it your stage, but on your platform, the number of open microphones that you have feeding the sound system, and the signal-to-noise ratio of that that microphone is receiving. When it's out like this, this microphone is receiving, if it's out here, this microphone is receiving almost as much noise from what's happening in the room as it is the signal from what's coming out of my mouth. Here's a loudspeaker right behind me. It's hearing that loudspeaker almost as much as it is my mouth. If I hold it a little closer, you know what happens. We all go like that really quick. But if I want you to hear me, and I put the microphone right next to my mouth, suddenly you've got a lot of signal and very little noise. Feedback is nothing more than the noise in the room and the noise that's coming from the loudspeakers getting into the microphone, being regenerated, coming back out the speaker, into the microphone, out in, out in. You see how that's a feedback loop. People call it a feedback loop. But I can break that by putting more signal in the microphone than it's seeing from the rest of the room. Therefore, I'm holding it right next to my mouth. My lips might even touch the grill from time to time. Scope and a toothbrush? Really, really good idea from time to time.
So, I can get almost right next to this loudspeaker before it even starts to ring a little bit. There, you can start to hear a little bit of feedback coming in.
And your technicians will, and yet you could still hear everything coming out of that loudspeaker because my mouth was so close to this microphone. Mic technique is huge, and if your musicians and vocalists don't understand mic technique, give them that illustration.
If I was trying to make the same amount of volume come out of the loudspeaker now,
I'd have to take this fader and crank it way up high, and the chances for this feeding back are guaranteed. It'll feed back. So, distance between the microphone is the number one problem. Also, some people, if you watch too many VH1 videos, they'll grab the microphone like this
and try to talk into it like this.
Don't try to mimic the mic techniques of anything you see on VH1. They're not singing in that mic anyways. It's just playing on a boombox somewhere else. A proper mic technique is to sing into the microphone, either directly on axis, or maybe just a little bit off axis, like this, if you have plosive problems, P's, B's, T's, that and tend to come through the system really loudly. You might try just a little bit off axis so that blast of air doesn't go into the diaphragm of the microphone. But that microphone's got to be right next to your lips. If I told you that I could make a sound louder than a jet plane, you might not believe me, but if you put your ear right there at my mouth, when I holler, I guarantee it'll be a lot louder than when you're at the airport watching a jet take off. It's all about distances. So get that microphone really close to your mouth. I love headset microphones. How many people hate them because they make you look like Madonna? Good! We're over that! Sweet! I'm so glad that we've moved beyond that. Headset microphones, keep that micro element right there at your mouth. No matter where you're moving. Sometimes that's a problem if you want to say something. If I said to Cindy, you botched that up, let's go back and redo that. That'll come through the sound system. But that mic element never moves. You turn, you bow your head to pray. You lift your head to look up at the heavens. It's much better than a lapel microphone that picks up depending on where your face is turned. Get to know those headset microphones. They're such a blessing.
And encourage your church or your school to invest.
Okay, 30 seconds. I forgot to talk about mic technique. So last night when you saw that vocalist pull the microphone away, it was when she was singing very loudly. Okay, she pulled it away so that the signal coming down the wire, coming out the loudspeaker system, was consistent. If you had your ear right there next to her and she had that change in volume, you couldn't stand it. It would be way too loud. And then when she was singing softly, it'd be pleasant to hear. Well, the microphone system, the sound system, can't, without using compressors, which is a technical gadget that we can have sometimes in our digital boards and sometimes as an external, without using compressors, this kind of technique, when you sing loud and you pull it away, it's a learned technique. And there's, I don't know where they teach that, but I praise God every time I see it.
I want to also let you know that these guys can do great things with adjusting different kinds of voices to make them better. I am one of those people that has those plosive P's, and so I know when I'm not using the headset, I'm using the mic on the pulpit or something like that, I tip it down a little bit so that it's not catching all my air. I also tend to have sort of sibilant S's. And I discovered a couple years ago, and I don't remember if I learned it from Carl or if I learned it from my husband Ed, but there's a thing called a de-esser that you can add to your system that takes a little bit of that hissing sound away from people's voices who have too much of the sibilant S. So it's good to know those things because then they can make us sound way better than we would sound otherwise. And there are some other people, our president of our college has a really hard voice to work with, and whenever he's going to speak, we usually try to make sure he does do a sound check because those guys are tweaking all kinds of things to make it sound better so we can all hear.
Yes?
Yeah. How do you learn to do?
Find a time when nobody else will be in the sanctuary, lock all the doors, take a microphone, and play with it. Us sound technicians got into sound because we love to hear our voices be really loud without shouting. So turn the microphone on and go to the equalizer on your board and just play with it. So here, this is, wow, that's an 18 dB boost at 10 kilohertz. And that's an 18 dB cut at 10 kilohertz. And so then I'm back to zero. Let me go to a band pass. Here's a 8.5 dB boost at 4 kilohertz. And if I swing that 4 kilohertz down lower and lower, and wow, that's what that sounds like. And then it sounds like this as I get up higher and higher. And if I cut that, it sounds like this, low to high. And I can play with the Q of that filter. I'll boost it instead. Now you're getting the idea. That's what you need to do.
And did you hear that he said, lock all the doors and you're all by yourself? So these guys like to be behind the scenes and they like to do their stuff in a way that really kind of nobody notices, but they have a lot of fun doing it, right? And that's one of the other points that we kind of wanted to make, both with projection and with sound, that nobody notices when you're doing it right. And so if you are at a church or at a school where you're just, all these questions that people are coming up with just haven't even occurred to you, it's because you've got really good technicians. And you haven't ever had any trouble. And some of you are working at churches where your technicians are your volunteers that don't know enough, and you've always got these problems. But you know what? The more that you say, I really appreciate what you're doing, especially when you didn't notice anything, that means everything went right. And you say, that was just so great. The sound mix was good, the slides moved at the right pace or whatever, they start to pay attention to that, and sometimes they actually want to make it even better the next time, and maybe your volunteers just need a little affirmation that you're actually noticing what they're doing, and that you might notice if they get a little better, too. These guys usually are so well-trained that I don't. But I have to remind myself to thank them for what they've been doing, because I usually don't notice anything. And that's great. That's the way you want it to be.
I have a question. Our pastor uses the pulpit mic. He's got a lapel mic, but he chooses to turn it off most of the time. Mm-hmm. Not it. But that pulpit mic picks up not just the P's and the B's, but it picks up all of his mouth sounds. You know, the clicks and the whatever we all do when we speak, you know? The sacking and the, I don't know, what do you call it? But
tell him to stay hydrated.
He needs to drink more water.
He's drinking more water.
Okay.
That's a studio trick. When you're working in the studio with a voiceover talent, and you hear a lot of them, and you can almost hear what they had for breakfast. Water. Stay hydrated.
I have been chewing gum, which is usually not what somebody who's speaking should be doing. But I found that helps me stay hydrated, too, when I can't be drinking something all the time. So that's another little Tic Tac or a tiny piece of gum. Not so much that you're kind of chawing on it, though.
Yes.
One of the, speaking of, as you were working with the microphone, we have a number of pastors and assistants at our church, men and women, and we finally had went in and locked the door with each one of them, mm-hmm. and either the pulpit mic, the lectern mic, or the headset mic, we had the techs find their ideal range.
Excellent.
For those microphones, and never then set all that up.
Excellent.
So whenever they have whichever microphone or where they're going to be, then the tech knows to set that so that it sounds as good as it can in those systems.
How many of you are using digital boards in your system?
One.
Oh.
Two. Okay. When you do that, you can save those EQs as libraries, and you can call up the EQ for Pastor X, song leader Y, and all those settings come in that nice. If your technicians are well versed enough to use that, it's fantastic, just fantastic. This is an example of a digital board. I'd be happy to show it to you afterwards if you want to come up and see what some of the advantages are. If you're used to working with an analog console only, there are some learning curves. But
I have a suggestion.
Yeah.
A camera. When you set the slides and the knobs for a speaker, take a picture of the board and print it and stick it up. Pastor Joe, we have a praise band that plays that requires totally different board setting than everything else. Yeah. And when you open the door, Faith Journey's picture is on the board. And start moving slides and turning knobs and we get back to the starting point.
Sure.
The sound guy's got to tweak it. But,
right, right.
But we have the place to start.
I was going to say that's the exact point that I was going to make. That's at least a great starting point. Sound changes, some would argue this, sound changes dramatically. The speed it travels, the sound that you have, sounds that you get change dramatically based on the environment that you're in. It can sound one way one day, and with exactly the same settings, exactly the same people, can sound dramatically different the next. So having those settings as a starting point is perfectly acceptable. To have those settings as a rule, I would brace against that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
When you have things like an electric guitar, a keyboard, is it better to have soundboard set a baseline on the volume and have them adjust it?
Ah.
Or does the instrument set a baseline and soundboard?
And how loud does their amp on stage get?
Exactly.
And how loud does the drummer beat on the drums that you have to bring everything up above the drummer?
I want to do just a little demonstration with the drum thing, because I actually taught Carl something the other day that he didn't know about before. But my husband's a drummer, as I said. And I've paid attention to student drummers over the years. And at one point, you know, these are just normal sticks, and I'm not a drummer, so this isn't going to sound very good, but you can hear how loud that is, and then you just listen to how loud that is. It can be really soft. If your drummers are too loud, get them a pair of these that are called hot rods. They play softer. They can't play quite as loud. And then you can mix, then your technicians can mix the balance a lot more easily if your drummer's not too loud to start.
On-stage volume is a huge issue, and it's an issue everywhere. Churches aren't the only ones to deal with this. Bands, bar bands to touring bands deal with this. When the onstage musicians turn up their volumes loud enough so that they can hear what they're playing coming out of their guitar amps or keyboard amps, sometimes it's too loud. And nothing you do, you could turn everything off in the system, and they're still too loud coming from onstage. Take them out for dinner. Drive them. Pay them. Whatever you do. Cut the power cord. No, don't. Get them somehow to live with less volume on stage so that you have more control in the house. Maybe look into the in-ear monitor system. It's kind of expensive. It's kind of technically over the top for many churches. But maybe that's where you need to go, so that they can hear themselves and isolate themselves. Look for musicians that have the ability to play with less onstage volume. Definitely look for people who will work well with you. Yeah, I think your question also alluded to one other thing. Do I let them try to set the volume from onstage? If you've got a musician that has a foot pedal on their keyboard, and they've got 9 keyboards, and they got a Leslie over here, and they've got foot pedals, and they're mixing themselves really great, there might be nothing you can do to overcome that. And then you're just going to have to mix around their sound coming from on stage. But if you're able to talk with musicians and able to have that dialogue, the sound out in the house is the technician's responsibility, and the musicians on stage have to relinquish that control in order for you to do your job most effectively. They're not in the house. They can't hear what it sounds like out at the sound booth. Hopefully your sound booth isn't a hole in the wall in the back of the sanctuary. Hopefully you're in the... Yeah.
It's terrible. It's like And so I say to the guys,
"Yeah,
would you do that?"
Get up.
I say, get walk. You know, while we're rehearsing, you're going to have to come out. Right?
Walk around. Yeah.
So quickly, just a few more tips just as we're getting ready to leave to address some of these questions and some of the other points here. One of them is that maybe sometimes the musicians or the other worship leaders need to walk around while everybody else is rehearsing so that they can listen to the mix and say, well, I really intended to the sound guy, I really intended for this instrument to be a little higher at this point and for us to hear that instrument or voice at that point, to give enough information to your sound crew so that you can get the best from them because they know what to anticipate. Okay? Another thing that I think is important is that when these guys work for the big shows in the FAC as well as for worship in the chapel, and they learn that a show there doesn't sound the same as worship in the chapel, that the sound mix for worship is to encourage congregational singing, to enable the congregation to sing. So you probably don't have the mix quite as high as you do for one of these great shows that we love to go to on a Friday night. So those are, I think that was part of what Jordan's question was about the congregational singing mix. You might have the voices a little higher, you might have the piano a little higher, you hope your bass player is a little bit lower. Some of those kinds of things are things to consider because the purpose for being together is to worship God. And I think that's kind of where Carl and I wanted to start and to end, is to say what we do in our preparation, in our leading, in our work during worship is to be worshiping God. It's the offering of our gifts to God's service, to God's people. And we do it in different ways. We do it in different places. But it's how we're giving our offering to God. And sometimes we do that best while we're at the board or while we're up front leading. Sometimes we do that best in the chairs or in the pews. And so we are very much appreciative that we're part of teams, so that sometimes somebody else is doing that kind of work in worship, and we're able to worship as part of the congregation. So I hope that for most of you, too, you don't have one person that has to do it all the time, because really to be part of a team, encouraging each other and taking turns in different places is very helpful, too. Our time is up. Thank you so much for your interest, your questions, your suggestions.